And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. It's a beautiful Saturday morning. Oh my goodness, I wish we had windows or I could move this show outside, but I can't. So I'll be outside soon enough. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. I came across this article that really piqued my interest. And of course, this is the sort of thing that I find very interesting. And I don't know how you will, but I think this affects basically every living human being that's listening right now. There's a very simple type of a blood test called a complete blood count. Sometimes it's called a CBC with a differential. And that's my favorite, because a differential, they look at all the different types of the white blood cells and the red blood cells. And from that, you can kind of extrapolate, is there something going on with the human that needs to be improved upon? Or are they in pretty good shape? Well, there's one particular marker. Usually they give an abbreviation called RDW. That stands for red cell distribution width. And this article to me is very interesting. I've never read this before. But one of the most common blood tests that are done today is called C-reactive protein. And so if you have suffered an autoimmune disease or you've had lots of inflammation or lots of pain, you know what C-reactive protein is? It's a marker on a lab test that determines how much inflammation that you have. So if your C-reactive protein levels are at zero, that means everything is going pretty well. You don't have a lot of inflammation that's driving the disease process or causing you to have horrific fatigue or to sleep poorly. Because inflammation is a surefire way of messing up just about any system within the body. So it doesn't take a genius to figure out, I really want less inflammation, not more inflammation. So back to red cells, and the reason I'm bringing this up, in this study, it shows that measuring RDW, or red cell distribution width, on your CBC with differential is actually more precise than even looking at C-reactive protein to see how the body's really doing. Okay, it won't take me long to get through this, but it's interesting. The size of your red blood cells says something about your health. If they are all about the same size, then the chance that you'll develop a fatal cardiovascular disease is pretty small. That means when they're the same size and they're very uniform, that's good. When they're irregularly shaped in size and all different sizes, that's bad. They said, how come this happens? Well, we don't know. Sports scientists at the University of Mississippi in the U.S. have discovered that resistance training, that's that called exercise, like weightlifting, it keeps the red blood cells pretty much an even size. Well, how come this happens? Well, they don't know the answer to that either. Back to red blood cell distribution width. The red blood cell width distribution, or RDW, is an indication of the amount of variation in the size of a person's blood cells. You know how the Bible says the life is in the blood? Well, that's why we're talking about this, because the life is in the blood. It says the lower the RDW, the more uniform the size of the red blood cells. So they're all pretty close to being very uniform, almost identical. Now get this right here. About 5 years ago, an American cardiologist at Wayne State University discovered that people with a relatively small RDW, or red cell distribution width, they are noticeably less likely to die of cardiovascular disease compared to people with a high RDW. And so here's the numbers they looked at. If you look at your blood test that you just got from your doctor, or one that you had done 6 months ago, look under the marker called RDW. It's there, I promise you. Just look for it. When that number was less than 12.6, or 12.6 or below, the least likely chances of a person dying of cardiovascular disease. Which it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the number one cause of death in America, it's heart disease. And so when that number, RDW, is above 12.6, and the higher it goes, the worse things go for you, the greater the risk of the death. And they found this was much more predictable than looking at C-reactive protein, which has always kind of been the gold standard for inflammation brewing in the body. Since then, the researchers have repeatedly observed that a relatively low red cell distribution width, or RWD, it increases the survival chances in people that have all sorts of various conditions. Okay. The researchers at the University of Mississippi used the same resource for their recent publication in Preventive Medicine, which is a pretty good journal. The researchers used data on 8,257 results, some of whom did resistance training. And the more often that the participants trained, the lower the RDW was, or the red cell distribution width. So every two workouts per week reduce the chance of a high red cell distribution width by 11%. Anyway, it's just so interesting how they found a new correlation based on current blood tests. So what you want is, if your red cell distribution width is like 14, 15, 16, that's not good. Actually, I've turned this in kind of to a very encouraging proposition for myself, because now when I look at these markers on a lab test, I'm going, oh my goodness, they're right at 12.6. Things are going well. There's hope. Does that make sense? Okay. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. I have the buttons all pushed. It should be easy to get you right in. So, article number two. I like looking at these unusual things that you probably wouldn't hear anywhere else, because I want to be able to turn it into how do we improve our health. And so if you're not feeling good, the more that you move your body, there's a chance that your body will come back online again and it will serve you and do exactly what it's supposed to do. Okay? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Okay, well, thank you. Have a couple, a good friends, and the lady has developed rheumatoid arthritis. And so can you talk about that a little bit? Maybe I can help them out some.
Sure. This week an article was just published, or a study. And in the study, I want to say it was done in Japan, but they just looked at the severity of pain in women that had rheumatoid arthritis and the use of vitamin D. And they noticed that the more vitamin D that they gave the women with severe pain, the greater the pain relief was. And so that's one thing that you can look at. The other issue is, this is an autoimmune disease, which means under the right circumstances, the body will actually start to attack the joint. Let me just kind of give you an example that I'm going to make up. Let's say, for example, that a woman just can't tolerate the protein that's found in wheat. Whether you want to call it wheat gluten protein number 1, number 32, gliadin, gluten, it's all part of the wheat molecule. If she eats wheat and that's able to pass the lining of her gut and settle into the joint, say her inner left index finger, her immune system is going to come along and say, what is this foreign wheat protein doing in our joint? Let's attack it right now. And so the term autoimmunity means the body is actually attacking itself, which is what we don't want. So to me, one of the biggest components that's in her favor is just simply identifying what is she eating that's triggering these autoimmune reactions. And if that happens to be corn, all you do is remove corn. If that's dairy products, you remove dairy. If that's wheat, you remove wheat. So if you can remove the trigger, that can go a long way to getting her into what I would call maybe remission, getting it to where it's so quiet you can't even tell she has that. Okay, number three topic. Have you ever heard of the studies on consuming cod liver oil or fish oil and rheumatoid arthritis?
Yes, you've talked about that.
Well, that would be something that would really be in our best interest. All the cell membranes are made specifically of essential fatty acids. And when you have fish oil, you have what's called eicosapentaenoic acid and then docosahexaenoic acid. Those seem to be very, very deficient in people that have rheumatoid. And so if she could just start eating fish from the ocean, actually one of the best ones of all time is just sardines. Most people probably celebrate when I say sardines because they're going, I've been waiting for somebody to give me permission. I love them. Okay, the other thing that you're looking at is, this is really one of the greatest indications for all the phytochemicals that are found in spices that we might add to food. So ginger is one of the biggest ones that helps rheumatoid arthritis. And so if she could find a way to incorporate more ginger, either in her cooking, it could be as simple as taking a supplement of ginger, then she's probably going to experience a lot less pain and suffering. The other one that I think of is called turmeric. So like if she wants to make a meal of sardines with cumin and yellow curry on top and then French's yellow mustard, that would be her turmeric. I haven't ever seen a case of rheumatoid where there wasn't an underlying what I would call food allergy, which that's just my simple way of saying it. So I'm trying hard not to overthink that process, but if she's eating a food that's triggering her own immune system to attack her joints, well, I don't see how she's going to make much progress until she comes to terms with that. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes. And exercise, you know, you've talked about that, so I'm on my 2-mile-a-day hike every day.
Oh, good job. And see, for her, it may be that she has so much pain, we have to have a starting point of just doing stretching exercises. So if she's able to get on the floor, we could start the process of stretching everything from her back to her spine to her hips to her knees, feet and ankles, legs, you name it, we could stretch it. And that's been shown to be extremely beneficial. That's one of the reasons why I think yoga routines, when it just involves stretching, can be so good for the body.
All right. Well, it's very much appreciated. I take notes every day or every week and try to do all of that, and it's really helped.
Well, you're sure welcome, and I appreciate your phone call on behalf of your friend.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Be sure and give her my best, and I wish her a speedy recovery.
Okay.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, sir. Bye-bye. I don't think I would wish rheumatoid on anyone. I did see a woman this week with rheumatoid, and you could look clearly at her left hand, and I just felt like, How does that work? And of course, you know what I'm saying, the thumb joint itself was so misshapen and malformed, but that was the effects of rheumatoid damaging the joints. You know, there was a time that rheumatoid arthritis was very, very rare. It really was. I think you've heard me talk about in 1941, scientists got together and the recommendation was to start fortifying foods, specifically cereals. So that involved everything from, you know, rice and corn and wheat. And if they would use that to make a breakfast cereal like, you know, frosted mini wheats, what they would do is they would add fortified iron to it. Well, that's a huge mistake. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
I have a question this morning about dark chocolate. I understand that it's beneficial, but I don't know exactly what the benefits are. So can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure would. So is there a particular brand of dark chocolate that you really like a lot?
No, not particularly. I just buy one that has from 75 to 80% of the cocoa.
Oh, you've made a good choice. For a second there, I thought you were going to say the dark Reese's peanut butter cups. I was going to say that may not be exactly the type of chocolate they're referring to. But yeah, can I tell you what pops in my mind real quick?
Sure.
There's a small island, I've forgotten the name of it, off the country of Panama. And on this island, I guess the cacao grows just about everywhere. They got these cocoa bean pods everywhere, and that's what they use to make chocolate from. Well, on the island, since this is widely available, the chocolate, what they do is they consume it in the form of a beverage every day. So for all I know, they're having hot chocolate every time of day. But the issue is they have almost no heart attacks or heart disease on the island. And so when you look at the studies, they're going, okay, what are they doing differently than people that are on the mainland of Panama that are having all these heart attacks? And it just breaks down to they're consuming chocolate every single day. But they're not, it's like what you're doing. They're not consuming chocolate that's been heavily, heavily sweetened with the addition of lots of sugar. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But chocolate actually contains these polyphenols, and they seem to be very specific toward reducing the buildup of inflammation and debris in the arteries and the veins, which to me, that's a pretty big deal, because if you look at the number one cause of death in North America, it's going to be heart disease, isn't it?
Yes.
So I think that when you consume this dark chocolate that has a high concentration of cacao, like what you're doing, like 80%, you're doing yourself a favor. It's almost like you're taking vitamins and minerals for your heart.
Oh, well, is one small square a day about what would help, or should it
be? Yes, no, it should help. I would say 1 to 2 would be perfectly fine.
Okay.
So that could be part of your daily regimen of trying to help yourself, is taking a little bit of chocolate in.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd heard that it was really good, but I really, nobody could ever say why.
Well, you know, if I had, to me, this would be very easy just to look up articles and research. This morning I was doing research on strawberries to look at longevity, and I didn't realize this, but they've got 3 studies going on right now. It's number one, they're looking at older women to see how they move with strawberries and without strawberries. And so it's called a fragility study, and I could not find the results of it. I think it was completed about a year ago. But to me, that caught my eye, and I thought, okay, here they are. They're giving strawberries to women, and they want to see if it helps them move better and maintain their balance. So if they go from frail to being stronger, well, I like studies like that.
Yeah.
But that would be easy to do, is I can look up articles on chocolate, and I can try to read them next week on the radio.
Okay.
And
probably
I am
a
not
lot of people interested.
And I am not being paid and sponsored by Hershey's Incorporated.
No, you wouldn't be with this kind of chocolate.
No, and I'm just joking about that. But a Hershey's Kiss is not exactly the type of chocolate that we're talking about. That's probably mainly sugar, very little chocolate.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Morgan. I appreciate it.
Yes, ma'am. You have a great day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
What is it called? Oh, yeah, I remember it now. I think the very famous language studies program is called Rosetta Stone. And, of course, I think that's kind of play on words, the famous Rosetta Stone. But I want to say that one of the old studies that just perplexed doctors forever and researchers was the studies that came out of Rosetta, Pennsylvania. And I don't really remember the exact geographic location of Rosetta, Pennsylvania, as related to Philadelphia, the city or the large metropolis of Philadelphia. But the issue was, Rosetta tended to be, and I hope I can tell this right, I think I can, Rosetta, Pennsylvania was a town or an area where it had an extremely high Italian population. And what made it curious to the researchers was they seemed to have just very, very interesting longevity scores, which means they lived a lot longer than anybody else around them. And they said because of their Italian heritage, they tended to really like to consume more wine, more cheese, more fatty meats, maybe even sausages. They would consume a lot more chocolate. And the other issue was, I remember in this one study, they tend to be just maybe a little bit more portly or larger or chubby than those that would live, say, in Philadelphia. I don't know how that's possible, but I guess it is. But they studied this group of people for maybe over 10 years, and they just could not figure out, what is the deal here? Why are they living longer, even though they're drinking probably more wine than what they should, and they're eating fatty meats, including cheeses and sausages, and they're eating lots of chocolate? And so as they begin to study this, they just ask the question, like, what is going on here? And they finally found out that these polyphenols that are found in, say, for example, our conversation right now is concerning chocolate, is it acted like a prebiotic. And so you're probably thinking to yourself, well, what is a prebiotic? Well, it would be a substance that's found in nature that tends to feed and nourish and promote the growth of good, healthy, beneficial bacteria that live in the human body. And I know you know this, but your fortunes are going to rise and fall based on the numbers of good and beneficial bacteria that live in your body. And what would happen if you didn't have enough good, beneficial bacterial colonies in your gut? Well, then you're leaving yourself open for the toxic ones to move in. That could be everything from toxic bacteria like Streptococcus and Staphylococcus and Clostridium difficile and all manner of toxic fungus and yeast like Candida that grows in overabundance. Well, you don't want that. No, 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 no. You want the good, healthy ones. But they found that the polyphenols or the flavonoids found in chocolate and also in red wine, that it was very, very good at stimulating, encouraging the growth of only the good beneficial bacteria. So isn't that interesting? You eat the dark chocolate, and the net result is you don't suffer the same diabolical diseases that everybody else does. And so I think this can be like a fairly simple proposition. If you educate yourself that dark chocolate might be beneficial, then 1 to 2 squares a day might actually end up being a tremendous health benefit instead of just being a guilty pleasure. No, it'll make sense the more that we study the research on that. But I think those are good questions to ask. You know, it's amazing how God has created everything. To me, it is. I think this week the news demonstrated they had just recovered in an archaeological dig a signet that had King Darius's name attached to it. And I thought to myself, that is so fascinating. The Old Testament and the Bible, the history is coming alive. Especially, there's a lot of people that believe that King David was just a myth and these stories were just myths. But isn't that interesting? They found a signet from King Darius, and that would have been from the book of Daniel. But I just find that so interesting. And so the more that we study this, the truth just keeps coming out over and over and over again. I love it. Okay, next article. Unless you want to join me on the radio, there's a phone line open at 903-586-5257. If not, I'm going to introduce you to a new hormone that you probably have never heard of before. But you see, it's good to study things that we haven't heard before because it just gives us more information. And I really think the bottom line is, it helps you make better choices. Remember what it says in the Bible? My people are destroyed from a lack of knowledge. And of course, what do you want? You want wisdom and knowledge. You want to know how to apply them. Okay. Both the kidneys and the brain, they secrete a chemical or a hormone that delays aging. And if it delays aging, what that really means is it keeps the cells and the tissues of your body in better working order. Thus, it lengthens your life expectancy, and it reduces the chances of you having age-related diseases, such as macular degeneration or kidney disease. It also helps keep your muscles strong, in addition to keeping your heart and your arteries in good working order. The longevity hormone is called Klotho. That is spelled K-L-O-T-H-O. I mean, it's a new hormone that I'm reading about, so if it's new to me, I'm assuming it might be new to you also. And so psychologists at the University of California in San Francisco, they discovered that chronic stress reduces the concentrations of Klotho in the body. Klotho was discovered in the 1990s by Japanese researchers. Aren't the Japanese literally some of the most clever, industrious peoples on the planet? I think they are. I'm so interested when they come up with a new invention. I'm going, oh, another one from Japan. That's great. This study was published in Nature, 1997, November the 6th, volume 390, in case you want to look it up. The Japanese genetically modified mice so that they could no longer produce Klotho. And they observed that within a few months after birth, they started to develop age-related diseases such as muscle decay. That's when your muscles just kind of shrivel up and fall away. That's atrophy. They also develop osteoporosis. Well, that's kind of early to develop osteoporosis when you're only 3 months old. They also develop hardening of the arteries, and they developed emphysema of the lungs, even though they weren't smoking cigarettes or vaping. Which, of course, when you develop advanced heart disease and emphysema, that's what caused the mice to go ahead and die. These findings led the Japanese to suspect that Klotho was an anti-aging hormone. I'd say, okay, fair enough. In 2005, molecular biologists at the University of Texas published the results of an animal study in the journal Science, which confirmed that the Japanese were suspicious of. The Texans modified mice genetically in two ways so that they produced greater amounts of Klotho. And they observed that it increased their lifespan by about 20 to 30%. So basically, in a nutshell, lifespan, longevity, health improved, or they had a 20 to 30% longer life when they produced more Klotho. Epidemiological studies suggest that Klotho has the same effect in humans. And in one unique study, it's called the Over 65s in the Italian Chianti study. Well, this comes from the European Journal of Applied Physiology. They had more strength in their hands. And another one from the Journal of Gerontology, Associated Biological Sciences, Medical Science. I know, that's too much. Their legs were stronger. So when they had more Klotho, they had greater hand grip strength, which is proving to be one of the most accurate markers of all time. If you lose your strength, every system in your body starts to deteriorate and decline. So do you want to have strong legs, strong hands? The answer is yes. Here's another one right here. The higher the concentration of Klotho in the blood, I botched that one, but they're just saying the more Klotho that's in the blood, greater grip strength and greater leg strength. And if your legs are strong, what are the chances of you falling? They're much lower. In addition, a high Klotho level reduced the chance of cardiovascular disease. That comes from the Journal of American Geriatric Society. When was that done? 2011. So that's 12 years ago. And the other one from the Journal of the Gerontology, American Biological Science Med Magazine. That is a mouthful. They showed that when Klotho was higher in the blood, there was less forgetfulness, less mental aging. The mind could be preserved and kept sharp. That's what you want. It says elderly people with relatively high levels of Klotho in their blood also function better, and they needed help much less often. That comes from Rejuvenation, whatever the other name of the journal is. Anyway, And indeed, in the Chianti study from Italy, the elderly with relatively high amounts of Clotho in their blood, they lived longer than those with a low concentration. Simple as that. So this is one of the reasons why you want to take good care of your kidneys, because your kidneys produce it. So let me give you a nutshell right here. The more Clotho that you have in your bloodstream because your kidneys are healthy, better hand strength, more leg strength. You have a decrease in cardiovascular disease. You have a decrease in mental aging, decrease in forgetfulness. You function much better as you age. You end up needing less help if you're elderly and you have more Clotho, and you live a whole lot longer. And of course, one of the reasons I'm building to this point, they say the amount of Clotho that you manufacture depends not only on your genes, but also on your lifestyle. And here's the kicker right here. High levels of stress on a daily basis will push your Clotho level right down. For example, according to an article published in the summer of 2015 by psychologists at the University of California in San Francisco, the group is called Translational Psychiatry. The researchers compared the Clotho levels of 90 mothers who cared for a child that had very significant autism. What that relates to is they were under very high stress, compared with 88 mothers that had a normal child. That would be low stress. And in the graph, even though you can't see it, they show the more stress that you have, the less Clotho. Boy, that sure does put a premium on the ways that you manage stress and the way that you think about things. That's got to be really tough. So whatever it takes to help your body manage stress better, like I said before, this is a really, really good reason to keep your kidneys and brain in great working order. I think the study that I read from South Korea, they just looked at what's associated with longevity, meaning what do you eat that may have some bearing. And they showed without a doubt that the more soft drinks that a person drinks, the more health problems they're going to have, the shorter they're going to live. And I can't think of anything that's probably harder. Well, no, there's lots of things that are really hard on the brain and the kidneys, but drinking soft drinks is just brutal. It will rip you to shreds. It's not worth it. If you can convince yourself to put away the soft drinks, whether it's a diet soft drink or one that's sweetened with high fructose corn syrup or cane sugar, I'm not going to get bent out of shape if you drink one soft drink a year. That doesn't bother me at all. Actually, what difference does it make if I'm bothered at all by it or not? It doesn't. The bottom line is, if you're drinking soft drinks, you're wrecking your body. It's just as simple as that. Can you think about all the fast food restaurants around town? How many of them have said, you know what, we really care about you, so we're only going to start serving herbal tea, or we're going to serve carbonated spring water or bubbly water, something like that? Wouldn't that be something if they did that? I wonder if the number of runs to the drive-thru would decrease over time if they refused to serve Pepsi and Coca-Cola and Dr. Pepper. What else is there? You know, I was talking to a man yesterday. Do you remember that there was a time that Coca-Cola, they had a small trace amount of cocaine in the Coca-Cola? I'm not saying I agree with that, but they used to have that. Well, do you know what 7-Up used to do? They used to add a little bit of lithium carbonate to their 7-Up to help brighten a person's mood. Which I don't know if you know this or not, but there is a condition called bipolar disorder, and one component of it could be just massive depression. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. So one of the pharmaceutical treatments for bipolar disorder is the use of lithium carbonate therapy. Well, 7-Up, there was a season they added lithium to the soft drink. And literally, that's how it was advertised. It would brighten your countenance, and it would put you in a good mood, and it would make you feel really, really good. Which, I did not take one in 1935, so I don't know. I mean, I could have. I'm so old. I'm just joking about that. All right. There's a phone line open if you want to join me on the radio. Okay. If not, I have another study that I'm going to share with you here. Okay, as far as I know, I have the buttons pushed properly, but I'm looking at the signal on the telephone. It shows that there's a phone line. I don't know if it's taken or not. Let me turn that off. Okay, I understand that. It doesn't matter, though. Okay, this comes from... I'm going to introduce you to another brand new hormone that you probably have never heard of. But I think it's good to hear these things. You can at least say, hey, I'm getting cutting-edge information from the 1990s from Dr. Morgan. Okay. The title of the article is basically Strong Muscles Equals Strong Immune System. And so basically, the riper the age that you reach, the worse your immune system functions. And it actually has been shown to decline more every year. So every year that you live on Earth, historically, the immune system decreases in its performance. Not good. And of course, you reach a certain point that your immune system becomes so weak that even a simple cold could mean your end. And usually the way that's always worked is you develop an upper respiratory tract infection that leads to pneumonia, the lungs fill up with fluid, and bingo, 3 days later you pass away in the middle of the night because you suffocate in your own fluids. I know that sounds kind of morbid to bring that up, but pneumonia has always been known as the elderly person's best friend. It's probably like the very best way that you could pass away, as compared to maybe more painful processes. Well, in the year 1999, researchers at the University of Bologna, I think it's looks like Bologna, but I think I've been told it's Bologna, Italy, they published an epidemiological study that suggests that you can halt the decline of the immune system by just doing resistance training and by taking extra vitamin D. Now, see, this is an interesting study right here. Let me tell you what they did. The researchers took blood samples from 62 men and women, and guess what their ages were? Between the age of 90 and 106. So these were not spring chickens they got these blood samples from. What they did then is they put cancer cells in the blood. They really did. And then the researchers measured how long it took the immune cells to eliminate the cancer cells. Okay, this has got my attention. This is interesting. The older that the participants in the study were, remember the starting age is 90, all the way up to 106. So there's your timeline right there, 16 years difference. So the older the participants in the study were, the fewer immune cells they had in their blood. And you know, you need your immune system to, quote, fight cancer and to fight viruses and bacteria and funguses and toxins. But the more muscle mass the participants had in their upper arms, the more immune cells they had in their blood. Isn't that interesting? See, all of a sudden now we have a metric that where the ball's in your court. You get it? And so if you're wanting to improve your immune system, it can be just as simple as trying to grow some muscle in your upper arm. Maybe you need to do a few curls or a few pull-ups. So muscles, it would seem, counteract the negative effect that aging has on the immune system, okay? There's a graph right here. There's no way you can read it. It's a radio. Basically, they show there's a relationship between age and the immune cells, and what that shows is from age 90 all the way down to, or all the way up to 106, immune function becomes less and less as you age. Does that make sense? But they also show another line that the more muscle mass that you have, the more immune cells and the more active they are. So that's kind of encouraging. You know what that means? The ball is officially in your court. You don't want exercise. You want to sit on the couch all day long, but you got to come to terms with reality. So if you want to live, then do your job. Take care of yourself. Another factor in the study was vitamin D levels, which this one's very fascinating also. And they showed it's just so clear on this graph. I know I can't show it to you, but they show the amount of vitamin D in the person's blood. They found out that the more vitamin D they had in their blood, this would correlate to more immune cells. And the more immune cells you have, you know what? The better you can kill cancer, okay? Although more muscle mass did indeed mean more immune cells. Now listen to this very closely, and I'm almost done with this right here. Although more muscle mass did indeed mean more immune cells, muscle mass did not influence the effectiveness with which the immune cells killed the cancer cells. Okay, just make a mental note of that. The researchers did observe a relationship with vitamin D, which means the higher the vitamin level, the more cancer cells the immune cells were able to kill. Hey, I like the idea of that. Let's corner it, eat it, beat it up, do whatever we have to. So, two things. Vitamin D, how do you get that? Well, have you ever heard of just going out in the sunlight? Okay, here's a mechanism right here. And this is a new hormone I'm introducing you to, unless you've already heard this before. Recent research has shown that the hormone orisin, that's spelled I-R-I-S-I-N. I'm just pronouncing it orisin. It's produced by your muscles. So when you exercise and you work your muscles and your muscles are in good working order, guess what they do? They produce this hormone called orisin. Well, what does it do? It offers protection against cancer. And that healthy but extremely old men and women, guess what they have in their blood? They have highly unusual amounts of this hormone called orisin. So if you live to be 104 years old, if I measured your blood, I bet you anything we're going to find out that you have a lot of orisin. I really dig these studies where they look at people that are 95, 96, and they still drive themselves to church. And they can go to the grocery store, and they can shop for their own groceries, and they can do their own cooking. And if a storm comes through, like what we had this week, they can go out in the yard and they can pick up limbs and they can pick up pine cones. There's only 10 million sweet gum balls. I don't like that, but that has to be done. So what are we learning here today? So if you keep your muscles in good working order, that in turn is going to bless your immune system, and it's going to make it possible that you can go out in the sunshine today and soak up some vitamin D, and it can work even better. So what have we learned? Resistance training equals longevity. Does that make sense? Okay. If you want to join me on the radio and ask a question, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. I'm not sure when I look at the button, it looks like the phone is like locked up, but I have no idea unless somebody calls. See, it is.
It is.
Okay, I tried to turn it off. Hopefully I did. So I don't even know if anybody can get through right now. It just looks weird. I'm not used to seeing that. Okay, article number next. I remember reading years ago, actually, let me go on a side note just for a second. I think everybody's familiar with the horrible, horrific chemical spill in Ohio. I don't know each and every detail, but I remembered a story that I read years ago. There was a very large battery manufacturing facility in India. I don't really remember the name of the town. It could have been Delhi, New Delhi, something like that. But they had this huge facility where they had a massive explosion. And when you hear about an explosion at a battery manufacturing facility, you start thinking about all the toxic metals. One of them might be cadmium. But all these chemicals and the fire raged. But basically, the entire area was just so heavily contaminated that it was just a toxic waste dump and nobody could go near it, which I know that sounds sad, but here's the punchline. There is a very specific type of a tree that's called a black poplar. And maybe we have poplars growing in Wisconsin, maybe they're in Nebraska, Colorado, I don't know. But the black poplar specifically, what they did was they planted this very specific tree in the immediate area where the chemical explosion and the chemical fires took place. Because a black poplar tree, guess what it does? It has one of the most unique abilities to purify and clean the soil of toxins, because the tree itself, when it grows, it starts pulling all the toxic debris out of the soil. Now, isn't that amazing? So in my mind, that's what I thought. That's what they should do in Ohio. They need to plant detoxifying trees. Let the trees do their job and do their work to clean up the soil. You remember years ago on the International Space Station, they were looking at plants that would help purify the air. And of course, I think the top two, I want to say the number one plant was the airplane plant. You know, it kind of looks like a fern. It hangs off. You get these root-like projections that come off the side of it. But they said it did such a good job at removing gaseous waste and toxins from the air that it was extremely beneficial to our astronauts in space. You know what number two was? It was aloe vera. I'm not making that up. That's, to me, that's so interesting. What would you think of if you had a horrific burn on your skin? You would say, snap me off a leaf of that aloe vera and rub some of that gel where I've got this burn. Some people even use aloe vera for bad cuts that just won't heal. They may take and fillet the leaf and just kind of tape it to where the wound is so it can start to draw all the impurities out of it so the body can heal. I mean, that's just one aspect of the immune system. It wants to push the toxic damaged debris out so it can be replaced by new, strong, healthy, radiant cells. But in this particular study, they found the aloe vera plant was really, really effective at cleaning the air. So maybe the question is, should you have plants in your home? Yes. Should one of them maybe be an aloe vera? Absolutely yes. Let the aloe vera do its job. So, besides purifying the air, you know aloe vera is amazing for the rest of the body. It just really is. I know this one I can't really prove to you scientifically. I've tried to look up articles, but I haven't found one yet. But if somebody has a severe injury to their back or their spine where they have bulging disc, I really have discovered that aloe vera juice and aloe vera gel is really one of the greatest benefits of all time to help the body rejuvenate. Now, does it rejuvenate in one day? No, it does not. You know, you have to come to terms with that if you have a significant injury or you've been suffering horribly with a problem for many, many years, you're not going to get complete resolution of your problem in like one nanosecond. I think you're thinking more of a medical approach. Here, take this drug. As long as you take the drug, you won't feel the pain. But that doesn't mean anything is fixed or repaired. It's just numbed the pain fibers. Okay. There is a... let me just read this to you. Everyday food such as tea. I know you don't think of tea as a food, but tea is... it's amazing stuff. Onions, apples, cucumbers, even strawberries. What do they contain? They all share together a flavonoid called fisetin. Have you ever heard of that before? F-I-S-E-T-I-N. According to experiments that researchers from the American Scripps Research Institute published in eBiomedicine, that fisetin may actually prolong life. Now, this is the angle that I like talking about right here. This compound or flavonoid called fisetin, they're showing that what it does is it clears out senescent cells. don't know if you know what that means, but as we age, we tend to build up these cells that they just refuse to die. Some people call them zombie cells. The problem is, if they don't die, they're just taking up space, they're using your resources, but they're also emitting their metabolic waste or their toxins. So they're not benefiting your body. It's not like they're helping your heart work better. They're not actually making repairs to your body. Your immune system doesn't do its job the way it should. Because as we age, we build up these senescent old cells that just refuse to die. So when I come across an article like this where the compound called Phystin is found in cucumbers, it helps clear out aging senescent cells that are just taking up space and bringing you down. Yeah, I'm going to read this. This compound called Phystin, it clears out senescent cells and it prevents tissues from malfunctioning due to the accumulation of decayed cells. That's what zombie cells are. The researchers wondered whether natural senolytics actually exist. That would be a compound that would break down old zombie cells or senescent cells and kick them out of the body. Senolytics are substances that clean up the senescent cells in the body. The accumulation of these outdated cells, which no longer do their job well, is an important factor in the aging process, and that makes tissues lose their function. Does that start to make sense? Anti-aging researchers hope that senolytics, like Phystin, will not only increase our lifespan, but they will increase our health span. That's kind of an interesting term, but I like that. The ability to function at a high level as long as humanly possible. It's not difficult to recognize a senescent cell. It produces more of the enzyme. It's called senescence-associated beta-galactosidase than a cell that's still functioning properly. Anyway, I know that's a lot of information. Of course, the researchers use this principle, and they tried to screen a number of natural compounds that they may be suspected might have anti-aging effect. And when they exposed these senescent cells in a culture, they wanted to find out how much of them would actually work. And you know what? I'm looking at the chart right here. And they look at senescent cells versus these compounds. And man, the two that just stand out as in amazing. Have you ever heard of curcumin before? Or turmeric? Yeah. It shows that it's really a promising natural compound that helps rid the body of senescent cells. But the number one is Phystin. Phycetin is a flavonoid with a structure similar to that of quercetin. It looks like quercetin. It's not, though. It's present in cucumbers. So do you like eating cucumbers? That's about the easiest thing you can do is cut up a cucumber, add it to your salad. So Phystin is found in cucumbers, onions, tea, and when I say tea, what if we're referring to white tea, oolong tea, black tea, green tea? It's just another indication that when you drink tea, you promote longevity or anti-disease properties. It's also found in strawberries. Yeah, strawberries. Today would be a good day to plant them, probably. Apples and grapes. So, let me read those again. Cucumbers, onions, tea, strawberries, apples, and grapes. According to a Japanese research, people consume about a half a milligram of Phystin every day. And as far as I know, the more that you get of it, there's no negative side effects. Okay, here we go. Here's one study that I read on that. They took a... I know this was a horrible thing, but they did it anyway. They actually did a little bit of liposuction and removed fat from a human volunteer. I can't imagine there being any human volunteers that have extra fat. Maybe I need some education here. When they took these fat tissue samples from human volunteers, they gave them Phystin to see if it would greatly decrease the number of senescent or zombie cells And guess what? It did. Which means this substance called Fistin, not only does it remove old zombie cells from the body, but simultaneously it helps all the markers that prevent the body from aging. That's good. Here's another one. The researchers fed a group of laboratory mice. They were 85 weeks old, which means that they're at the end of their lifespan. They say that basically that a lab rat that is 85 weeks old is about the equivalent of a human being that's about 75. So if you're 75, don't take offense at what I'm saying. I'm not saying you're old. And what they did was they gave them a little bit of Fistin that comes from cucumbers. Probably what they should have done is just had the rats eat cucumbers. And it showed that those in the experimental group that had the cucumbers, they lived significantly longer than those that didn't. I'm kind of looking at the chart right here. It looks like they lived about 20% longer. To me, that's what it looks like. These results suggest that we can extend the period of time, the period of health, or the termed health span, even toward the end of life. Because that's what they did was they gave these old rats and mice Fistin to see if it would help. Given that Fistin is a natural product found in common foods, it's also available as a dietary supplement. I really didn't look up one study on dietary supplementation with Fistin in a capsule or tablet, so I don't know about that. Okay. So what have we learned today? All right, number one, aging is real. But what you do is you're going to try to mitigate that by doing what's in your best interest. See, if you smoke a pack of cigarettes every day for 20 years, you're probably going to take about 5 years of quality life off your lifespan. You'll just live 5 years shorter. I think the studies show that if you smoke 2 packs of cigarettes a day, that probably is going to reduce your lifespan by maybe, 7 years? I could always look that back up. But, I mean, everybody knows that the more cigarettes you smoke for the longer. I mean, my dad would be the prime example. He tried desperately after he had his second heart attack not to smoke, but he just couldn't quite, come to terms with that. So the ball is in your court, which means if you decide that you want to take good care of yourself, one of the components is just getting your body moving. If you ask me the simple things that just have to be done that are non-negotiable, I would say if you're a man, you really need to consider blood donation. And you can look up all the studies for yourself, but it's one of the most amazing things that you can do to help make the world a better place. Not only do you save lives, I think the average life, you save 3 lives every time that you give blood. That's useful to a person that's really in dire straits. And so giving blood is one of the greatest techniques of all time that you can really help yourself and you get to help others. Number two, and I think I'm going to cover this topic. I don't know when I'm going to cover it, but I'll cover it real soon, is just the idea of fasting. Fasting is almost always associated with the term or the word that's called autophagy. That's the Greek word for auto meaning self and phagy or phagy meaning eating, so self-eating. Fasting is absolutely one of the greatest techniques of all time to rejuvenate the body, to heal the body. Even if all you did today was go to the book of Isaiah, I don't remember the chapter, maybe it's 55, 56, somewhere around there. It's probably not now that I mentioned it. Just read about fasting. Once you read that, you're going to go, oh my goodness, I'm so glad this is here. I want to do it. And then physical exercise. The research on all these topics is just overwhelmingly positive. And so you know why I'm saying this. I'm just wanting to encourage you to take responsibility for your health and do what it takes to be radiant and strong. Plus, we need as many strong people as possible working and paying taxes to support and keep the wheels of life going in motion. All right. I've enjoyed being with you today. You're listening to Health Essentials on FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.